with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good post-derby Monday race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com, and what can you say about a meltdown of epic proportion, an upset of historic dimension, a storyline that more or less is the best example of why thoroughbred racing is the greatest unscripted drama in sports. Improbable? Yeah, improbable. Impossible? No. No. And a big part of Rich Strike's Derby win is being misidentified just because of the way in which he made the field. There would have been a very different examination of his potential to impact the race, to at least be kind of a Barber Road candidate. Was he a closer that was of the Zandon Modonegal variety coming in? Didn't seem like it. No, it didn't. But he was a deep closer that was going to be involved in a race where the pace had potential to boil over. And boil over? It was incendiary. This had all those elements that were there on paper, and all the conversation we had about the pace potentially being hot and setting up a chance for the obvious candidates. And the obvious candidates ran very well. Zandon Modonegal was hurt by jumping up at the start, but it came running. And Zandon did everything that he could have done to impact. You saw a ride by a journeyman jock in Sonny Leone that was just a thing of magical proportion. And I can't wait. I'm certainly looking forward to talking to Eric Reed here in 20 minutes, give or take. In fact, he just called. But the Sonny Leone portion of the story is just as remarkable as Eric Reed's story. And did we all, as Aaron Yagoda just texted me, Rich Strike didn't even make the T-shirt, the starting lineup T-shirt. I think if there's a lesson here, it's that the merchandising people have to put the AE horses on the T-shirt. The Sonny Leone ride is something that is absolutely so epic and is going to be talked about forever. We think about the Calvin Burrell rides, and this was even in some ways. I mean, it's one thing to just lock on to the rail and have it open up. Not that Burrell's performances weren't spectacular, but what Sonny Leone did was just amazing. Just you watch it over the overhead is so much fun every year with the Derby, just because of all the things that you see. But what we saw from Sonny Leone is going to be in song and story. It was unbelievable. Just unbelievable. The one thing I can tell you, did we all say that that this horse had a, you know, had a chance? I think if we had had the 2 weeks, I mean, we at least were talking about him on the track every morning and how good he was doing and how great he looked. But there was just never any expectation he was going to make the field. Eric will tell you. In fact, Marty McGee told you that Eric had sent him a text saying, "Well, I guess that, you know, it's not to be." What Marty identified as a concession speech, and literally a minute or two after Eric had sent that to Marty McGee, Ben Huffman called Eric to say, "You're in the race," because Wayne Lucas, who of course we'll get to when we talk about Secret Oath, had pulled Ethereal Road. So this is a somewhat random result, of course, because this is a horse that nobody really was spending time examining closely. I mean, it just didn't ever look. There wasn't even the kinds of, you know, of rumors that so-and-so, whether it was Ethereal Road or anybody else, was struggling and you know, was not 100% maybe, and was being... There was none of that. It was... Yep, you heard it. You heard it from Kevin Gerstein on the air Friday. So at 9:30. So just the fact that he gets in the race, the fact that he's in the 20 hole, and the fact that he's an unknown whose figs, you know, appear to be short. One thing that was not short, certainly, was, you know, his predilection for Churchill and how well he gets over that course. I mean, the maiden win. I mean, the fact that there's so many things about this that is just unbelievable. Being claimed, drawing in the, you know, Eric. You know, we know Eric Reed a long time, and that's kind of a part of this, and certainly a regret. Marty also a longtime acquaintance of Eric Reed's, and at least Marty had some, Marty bet Rich Strike, had him, a few times. Marty was kicking himself that he didn't, you know, really bet on him. He said he bet on him, you know, as a saver. But, you know, the second longest mutual behind Donerail. And there's so much about this that's appealing and wonderful. Just the fact that anybody, as I tweeted, you know, the first thing, you know, very frequently after the race, you know, we have to get in the car and start to head, you know, home. And that's what we did. Had a chance to congratulate Eric and his dad. I met his dad, Herb. I met his parents before I ever met Eric. And in fact, I met the Reeds at my first Derby, 2001, the day after, the morning after, at their Rabbit Run B&B. But then I had to go. You know, Tina had never made the race. Tina was delayed in Baltimore, and you know, it was going to be touch and go anyway. But she ended up landing literally as the race was going off. So she was over at the airport. So after a little bit of backslapping and handshaking and congratulatory moments, had to get on the road. We were in Rochester yesterday to see the grandkids and Mother's Day, and both of the boys were, Spencer was up with his brother, and so we, you know, it was a whole nice Mother's Day with grandkids and the boys before we continued on to get home. But the first thing I could think of to say was just how amazing and special this kind of circumstance is. And yeah, there's wonderful stories for all, you know, 20, any of the 20 winners, the potential winners on Saturday, but the way in which this all unfolded. And so much so that even Steve Asmussen, who, as I was heading back up the tunnel, Dave Groening was with Steve, who was just smiling and just kind of throwing his hands up like, I don't know what else Epicenter could do. Was Epicenter probably, did he run the most complex and the most complete race? Yeah, he did. He did. And it, when you look at this chart, for those of you that haven't really looked at the chart, the obvious thing that you're going to see when you look at the half mile and the three quarter mile, look at where the horses that finished in the top half of the chart ended up. Rich Strike was 18th. Zandon, this is after a half, 18th. Zandon was 11th. Simplification was 15th. Mo Donegal was 17th. Barber Road 19th. Tawny Port 14th. That was after a half. And after three quarters, Rich Strike was still 18th. Zandon had moved to 9th. Simplification was still 15th. Mo Donegal was still 17th. Barber Road was still 19th. And Tawny Port was 14th. So only Zandon had started to proceed. Epicenter, though, was 8th early, then 5th after three quarters. He attended and chased that pace and stayed within striking distance, which was the anticipated trip. Then takes over. He was clearly rebuffing Zandon. But who could have imagined that Sonny Leone was pulling one Arcaro rabbit out of his hat with each passing pole? Just unbelievable, including that moment when he idles. When he actually, he didn't necessarily check, but he did have to idle for a stride or two before continuing on. It is unbelievable what he turned in here. And I'm sure when Rich joins us, one of the reasons I can't wait to talk to Rich, I mean, obviously we're excited to talk to Eric in a few minutes, but this to me is one of those examples that just goes to show you in a lot of ways that if any horseman, the narrow gap between horsemen's skills and inclusive here, horsemen, jocks and trainers, that the only real difference is, the narrow difference is, having a horse, in this case, that lets you showcase your talent on a certain stage. And, you know, I saw lots of people from Ohio, you know, fans and horse players from Ohio saying, you know, Sonny Leone's capable. Yeah, of course Sonny Leone's capable. Everybody... is that that gets a leg up. I mean, is capable, but to do it on this stage, this reminded me of a little bit of the Mario Gutierrez scenario. And I mean, not obviously Sonny's not as young as Mario Gutierrez was. And in fact, I made some notes yesterday. I'm trying to equate what this represents in terms of layer of shocking and stunning and remarkable Derby upsets. And you know, from the tote point, you know where it stands. But it actually fits in with what feels like a fairly regular interval in this race. A chaos kind of result. And if you go back 50 years, how about Dust Commander and Don Combs and Mike Manganiello? Isn't that it kind of fits? Cam Gambolotti and Spendabuck in 85. Mind That Bird, of course, Chip Woolley. Little E.T. fits this, right? And you know, even though California Chrome had, you know, plenty of experience and notoriety by the time he got to Derby, obviously, Art Sherman fits, you know, the profile as well. So it does feel every 10 to 15 years you get a Derby result like this that just adds to the, you know, the the sheen and the gloss and the wide-eyed amazement that it produces. And then when you fold in Eric Reed in particular, I mean, Rick Lawson, the owner, obviously, it's a wonderful, I mean, just magical thing for him, you know, to have claimed this horse. And, of course, I haven't seen much written about the fact that Calumet bred another Derby winner. The coda is, I did say that Lucas added a coda to his career with the Oaks win on Friday. Calumet keeps authoring codas. Keen Ice, by the way. The Keen Ice, I can't wait to talk to Sid on Wednesday and let Sid riff on this. This was one of those things where you know, you say to yourself afterward, you know, the mile and a quarter, there's something that you don't ever know. I mean, we did talk about the ones that had gone a mile and 3/16, because they've obviously had the closest. But when you look at the splits and you see how nicely Rich Strike was finishing, you know, with a sub-25 quarter, you know, you realize the running of, you know, these five quarters is what is unusual about the race. And you do not know who can just keep going on at that one pace. I mean, that's another part of Sonny Leone's ride that is amazing, because in the second quarter, he did use him to gain some position and have to, you know, stay within a certain striking distance. So second quarter, he picked it up, then he leveled off again for two quarters, and then he finished obviously better than anybody. I mean, that was apparent. From a pedigree standpoint, Keen Ice authored a mile and a quarter. Not that American Pharoah hadn't successfully negotiated a mile and a quarter or a mile and a half, but Keen Ice's upset in the Travers of American Pharoah certainly, you know, became a prominent storyline after the race. The other part of this, Casey, you can reach for Eric momentarily too, and we'll just make sure to get him going, you know, right on time. But the other part of, I thought, from Saturday was really, frankly, emotional. Obviously, the fire in 2016 at the Mercury Training Center that Eric owns and manages, I'm answering Eric because he's got ESPN to do. All right, so yeah, that's what we'll do. We'll let me see what he says on that. Some of the stuff that you can't. He was on today, this morning, him and Rick Lawson. The emotional portion of this between the fire at Mercury, that and you heard me explain over the, you know, the last 3+ weeks, because I was tracking the points for Eric and you know, letting him know where he stood, and we were kind of going back and forth for weeks about getting in. And, you know, what he kept reiterating to me was that he wanted to do it for his staff and for the people that have been, you know, with him. I mean, I obviously excited for him and you know, for himself, certainly, to, you know, get an opportunity, let alone win, but that, you know, between Sonny Leone and his staff, it just was so, he thought it would be just such a tremendous, you know, rising from the ashes kind of story. Yeah. The parallel story for this to touch on, and it looks like Erica's going to join us. Looks like we'll get. Looks like Erica will come on 10:30 because he wants to. He wants to really have a full, you know, full fledged conversation. So I think second half. So Brendan Walsh and Andy Beyer in this next 40 minutes. The other story that I tried to draw attention to on Saturday that started the stakes sequence that was unbelievably moving is another claimer that won a stake on Saturday. Jason Cook, with Three Technique, horse we happen to know a little bit about, and his performance in the Knicks Go to start the stakes sequence on Saturday really ended up, you didn't know it at the time, but it ended up setting the tone for, you know, for the day's, to me, for the to the day's theme. This was a horse that was claimed for $40,000 by David Miller, and you saw the Louisville Cardinal logo on the jacket of Raffy Bejarano. And for $40,000, he got a horse, and Jason explained, and he'll visit with us later. He explained that he was tracking Three Technique and had his eye on him and saw the allowance race he ran in November and then claimed him weeks later when he was dropped and available for $40,000. And he just thought that they were giving up too early, which happens to be a pattern of the previous ownership. Jason Cook's story is so moving and inspirational in a different way, much more personal. He and his daughter, Peyton, in that winner's circle and out on the track on Saturday, was so sweet. He, Jason Cook, lost his wife, and Peyton lost her mother at the age of three. And Jason has raised her alone. She's 12 years old and so poised and winning and lovely. It was the outpouring of glee for Jason Cook to have that, and Peyton to have that moment on Derby Day, is what this entire undertaking is about. So to have a 40 claimer start the day's stakes wins and have a 30 claimer end them, to have, you know, two horsemen that have been basically, that were born into the game. Jason Cook's father won the 1957 Kentucky Oaks. L.C. Cook. And Herbie Reed was a small-time trainer. Medium-sized, you know, trainer. That started bringing Eric to the racetrack as a tot and had him walking hots and wrapping legs and hosing down horses' legs at age eight. So, if there was a Derby Day for hard boots and for those that do it because they dream about moments like that, it was Saturday. And any winner of any of these races, I mean, certainly we're going to talk to Brendan Walsh, Steve Asmussen probably tomorrow. I mean, Steve Asmussen did win two grade ones and finished second in the Derby. It wasn't a bad day for the Asmussen barn, despite people wondering if they'd ever win in Kentucky again. Chad Brown, we got to get to the Chad Brown story. Too much. I mean, just too much. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's so amazing to me that what you have to absorb and what you're treated to. And everybody made the most of the weather. Friday, you know, Friday ended up as about as neutral a bad day as you could have. And Saturday, I mean, would it have been nice to be sunny and 75? Yeah. So it was cloudy and 55. It was chilly for a good part of the day, but it was very pleasant. And people just seemed to have a fabulous time. The celebratory atmosphere both days, really all week, and knowing that, you know, the most taxing parts of the pandemic were behind us. That I thought was a big element of the theme. Let's talk for a minute. Andy Beyer is going to join us here momentarily, which is actually pretty traditional to have Andy offer thoughts after the Derby, to talk about Friday and Secret Oath. Well, I mean, those of us that were kind of lined up against her a little bit, and ultimately, I have no complaints about the approach I took Friday and Saturday, which was, you know, to look for prices and build off of them. And I certainly got a very good effort from Simplification, who is the Derby also ran that is absolutely going to Baltimore. In fact, he might even be there this morning. So Simplification goes forward. We'll talk about this and who's expected to line up. It doesn't appear that there's going to be a whole bunch of Derby runners that are going to tackle him, but there's a nice field assembling. There's every likelihood, by the way, as we talk about Secret Oath, that she's going. It'll be, at this point, surprising if she doesn't go. I got to say, I'm expecting... Bryland and Lucas to go forward with Secret Oath. It will not surprise me. And Simplification is going to need a rider because Ortiz is going to end up riding early voting for Chad. So Antonio Seno, who didn't disappoint in terms of preparedness, and of course neither did Chad or Steve Asmussen. I mean, those three all ran, and you know, you run this race 100 times. There's going to be several different winners. Epicenter is going to win a whole bunch of them, but you know, Zandon's going to get by. Modonegal's going to break clean, etc. So, Brendan Walsh cracking wise with me on the twing, oh my God, on the textings, that's great. Too funny. Secret Oath was as good as we thought she was going to be in February and March, and just wondered, you know, how much the Arkansas Derby was going to impact her, and the Oaks ended up being, in a lot of ways, exactly what people were expecting. You could have shuffled the deck with the four major players, and all you had to do was find the outsider. Well, to be honest, that's why I said I'm very happy with the way I approached the two features, because Pauline's Pearl, Desert Dawn, how she was 50-1, I have no idea. That was as bizarre as it gets. So the inclusion and it does feel good when you bet a horse properly. And Reverse Tri-Key made Pauline's Pearl, now, how am I going to call her that again? Desert Dawn made it worthwhile in the Oaks, but Secret Oath was just terrific. And to discuss the weekend, Andy?
Yes, I'm here.
There we go. Andy Byer joins us. Andy, we've had a lot of post-Derby conversations over the years, and we've had collapse scenarios in Derbies, but the last time you had one like this, the favorite one, Orb, this was not the favorite. Your thoughts?
Well, it was a fascinating race, and I love the fact that, like, the media, has just really kind of embraced this race and just the unpredictability of the sport. So I thought it was good for everybody. I have one historical observation to put everything in perspective. For much of the history of the Derby, including much of my early time around it, the race was dominated by horses who came from out of the clouds, whether it was a great horse like Secretariat swooping the field or an impossible long shot like Gato del Sol. That was the winning move in the Derby. And the reason it was because basically anybody could get into the field. And there was always a fast sprinter or two who would just go out there to give the owner a thrill of being in front of the Derby and set a huge pace, and then the race would collapse, and, you know, the closers would dominate. This all changed when Churchill Downs put in its point system that dictated you had to prove yourself in a real prep race, and there were sort of no 6 furlong horses like Groovy getting in the race anymore. So, you know, the race has been dominated by speed, you know, ever since, you know, Orbs come from behind win in 2013. But in this race, there was one sneaky speed horse. And I was talking to Andy Serling about the race the day before, and he said, the whole key to the race is Summer in Tomorrow. It was like a 50-to-1 shot, who had been running in Dubai, but who had, like, you know, if you look closely, who had, like, you know, six... You know, he had like 6 furlong, 44
yep,
and change type of speed.
Yep.
And when the gate opened and jockey M. Barzalone came out pumping like it was a 6 furlong race, that's what set up this pace scenario. And it was like, you know, it was like a flashback to the old days. All the speed horses collapsed. The stalkers, like Epicenter, were compromised, and the horse who made the big late run, namely the impossible Rich Strike, got the money. This was, I would say, in my 50-plus years of being involved in the racing industry, one of the two most, you know, impossible results that I've ever seen. I mean, there was, people will always look back and say, oh, gee, he had a good late pace figure or this or that. You cannot look at this horse's record and figure him to be anything much better than last. there's no second guessing to be done here. You couldn't pick the horse. You know, he should have been 100-to-1 or more. And yet, When you look at this, it, you know, the outcome was not fluky, except of course for Rich Strike. The horses who finished second, third, fourth, and fifth.
Yes.
Were all the logical horses. And if you look at them from the figure standpoint, I mean, Epicenter, who had run a 102, gets a figure of 100 behind Rich Strike's 101. Zandon had just run a 98. He runs a 98 again. Simplification's Best was a 96. He gets a 96. Mo Donegal had won the Wood with a 96. He gets a 96. Everybody ran to form. So, it, you know, it was not, it, you know, the only thing crazy about it was the fact that Rich Strike was the winner. But it was, you know, the way the race was run, overall, you know, really made a lot of sense. And, you know, my first reaction was to say, well, this, you know, because of the hot pace, you know, and the, you know, the trip that Rich Strike got, you know, this is kind of a fluke. And then I thought back, you know, to 2009, when the other most impossible race was run. My mind is blank for just a second.
When Mynette Bird
rallied up the rail, and you said, oh, you know, he got a rail trip from Calvin Burrell. You know, this will never happen in a million years. Well, he came back and ran a tremendous race in the Preakness, got a figure of 105. He finished third in the Belmont. He was just, he was just a horse, you know, who mystically got good at just the right time on the first Saturday in May. And I guess you could, you know, I would tend to say that about Rich Strike too. I mean, if this race had been dominated by a bunch of crazy 50-to-1 shots, I would say, well, it's just all an aberration. But he, you know, he beat, he beat the best, you know, the best horses in the field who were running their race. And you can say, yeah, he was benefited by the pace. But who was the big closer in this field? Zandon, and he outfinished Zandon. So, I think we have, you know, we have to give him credit for, despite the fact that he had favorable circumstances and got a remarkable ride, you know, he ran a pretty, he won the race pretty legitimately.
There's no doubt, and he won clear. And you know, one of the things about the Burrell wins, when you think about his three wins, including Street Sense, the rail trip, and the sea parting, that was not the case here with Sonny Leone, who had to make a handful of decisions, and every single one he made proved out as brilliant, and it's easy to see,
yep,
you know, when you watch that overhead now. But there were a few things that were, most notably, how much of an inside trip he wanted to utilize, because it seemed like the rail was not good all day, Andy.
I don't know about that, but, you know, it's sort of hard to tell, you know, when you've got sort of a, you know, wet tracks. I mean, a lot of jockeys will just get,
yep,
it in their head, I want to be off the rails. So I'm not sure if that was the case, but I'm going to review that among a number of other things. I mean, I would say, you know, the one thing going forward here, there's no doubt. It, you know, though I'm giving credit to Rich Strike, there was no doubt that about who the best horse in the field was, and then that was Epicenter. I mean,
yeah.
The fact that he was the one horse who was stalking that hot pace.
Yes.
He made what, you know, what looked like, what with the benefit of hindsight, you might call a premature move on the turn to seize command of the race. And then the dynamics of the race worked against him. He still held off Zandon's late charge and simplifications. So he ran well, and I would say if they don't run back in the Preakness, they're crazy.
Well, the thing that's interesting, and because it simplifications a go, he without question.
Yeah, right.
Mo Donegal's going to wait for the Belmont. And of course, Chad is sitting there with cloud computing 2.0 in early voting, and
yeah.
Boy, as it happens, Seth Klarman and Chad Brown look very smart bypassing this race, Andy, because all early voting was going to do was try to
yep.
win on the front
yep.
end. So he would have been a chicken in a pot.
Yeah.
So they can wait. Let me slip in a few things while I've got you, because on the rest of the weekend there were plenty of other notable performances. Speaking of Chad, obviously Jack Christopher is one of the more exciting returning 3-year-olds, and absolutely perfectly brought to the Pat Day Mile by Chad, who cited Dr. Bramlage and Rudin Riddle and their handling of Jack Christopher and the surgery.
Yeah,
but
he's really good. I thought he should have been the 2-year-old champion last year, despite his limited campaign. I think with the kind of handling he's gonna get this year, I mean, I think he's gonna have a big season in front of him.
Talk about the 2/7/8 races, Andy, and the fig difference for the Derby Distaff and for the Churchill Downs. They were about an hour and 40 minutes apart, and the figs are significantly apart.
Okay, that we are talking about. Let me get
Jackie's Warrior. Yeah, Jackie's Warrior and Obligatory.
Okay. The racetrack at Churchill, on both Oaks and Derby Day, was changing for reasons that are very understandable. I mean, in both days, you had the very unsettled weather, and and predictions of predictions of possible heavy rain. I mean, on Oaks Day, they must have sealed the track at the start of the day, because in our calculations, like the first two races were like 12 buyer points faster than everybody else, and the rain the weather looked kind of ambiguous. Throughout the card on Saturday, and I'm sure that there was a little fine tuning of the track that was going on, and there were a couple races on the card that if you were looking closely at times and making speed figures, that were just impossible. I mean, the fourth race, which nobody, it was just an N1X allowance race, came up unbelievably fast. Are you
yeah.
there?
Okay. Yeah, I'm here. That's the creative minister race, and he's going to almost positive McPeak will go forward with creative minister to the Preakness.
Right. Could be. I mean, and if you took the the time strictly at face value, it would have been the figure would have been higher than the Derby. Now, if we had made it higher than the Derby, I'm sure you would have been getting a few calls saying, "Has Beyer really lost his mind now?" No, I mean it had to be. I'm sure the horse ran quite well, and we give the figure a 92. Might have even been better, but you know he did not run faster than the Derby, and there was another. There were a couple other races on the card that just clearly I couldn't take them at face value. So you look at the two, the two races. Obligatory ran 122.17, and Jackie's Warrior ran just a little faster. The figure for Obligatory looked, for that race, looked pretty straightforward. We made it a 96. That just fit with everybody. That was 1 point better than Obligatory's best. That was the right race. But if you say that figure should be a 96, Jackie's Warrior was barely faster, and these are the best sprinters, some of the best sprinters around. Jackie's Warrior, of course, was a star last year, ran 110. Reinvestment Risk was coming off figures of 104, 103. Aloha West coming from a win in the Breeders' Cup Sprint last year. How could this be a real moderate figure? I just didn't. I just couldn't accept it, in occasions when we're making figures and we do our calculations in a straightforward fashion, and we get a figure that we say this just kind of contradicts right. Common sense. We will override it and assign the race a number which at least makes some sense.
Right.
So we gave Jackie's Warrior a 105. I would have expected them to run closer to 110, but didn't want to be overly generous. So we're going to have to just see. How these horses do in their next starts. And I know listeners who use the Beyer speed figures and, would like to know that they have the authority of a number that was handed down by God. there are just situations where the track changes or there's some kind of aberration that if we put down the straightforward number, you'd be getting all kinds of calls saying, this is ridiculous. So we're prepared to assert our opinions and put down a number that reflects the real ability of the horses. So I don't think anybody would look at these horses and say, "Oh, Jackie's Warrior can't run a figure of 105." This is as good as we can come up with. So sorry, wish I had a better answer to that question.
No, and it's a fair. It was breezy and dry, and it's a racetrack that has the ability to take on a lot of moisture. Before we wrap up, any thoughts about the Phillies on Friday and Secret Oath and the seeming likelihood that she tries the boys again in Baltimore?
Well, you know, if we know that D-Wayne loves to run Phillies against Colts in the right spot, and I think the fact that she obviously ran a nice race in the Oaks. It was not super, but she beat the best Phillies around. Got a figure of 94. Lots of the contenders are going to defect from the Preakness. It's not like the black-eyed Susan is going to confer great prestige on her. If she's fit, this is Wayne's kind of move. He'll take a shot.
Exactly, right? That does seem like the
I don't think she's good enough. I mean, the figure of 94 is not going to make her a winner against any of those top few finishers in the Derby. But, why not? I mean, he's 86. He can afford to roll the dice, right?
Well, Andy, as always, I appreciate the post Derby thoughts, and this one really capturing, I think, some people's imagination. Others just are shaking their head, and it's one of the things about the game that makes it just magical. You can look at it constantly, and no matter how much experience you have, there's something that can occur that is just confounding.
Yep.
and makes you want to go back and rethink everything you ever learned.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what I learned from the winner of the Derby, but it was. All in all, it was a story that people have embraced. I mean, even on MSNBC's political show at like 7 in the morning today, they're talking Kentucky Derby. It's always
good.
Always
good.
Good to see.
Exactly, and we got the same thing. Of course, Eric Reed and Rick Lawson were on today's show, and Eric just did an ESPN thing, and I know Howard here on the network on Sirius XM, Howard opened the show with Derby, and of course his father was a mammoth, a regular attendee at Aqueduct in Belmont and Saratoga, so he grew up in a household that was big and very racing friendly. It's always fun and makes keeps. We got these 5 weeks to keep people engaged and draw some in. I saw a very funny comment, and I'm sure we will get to the post race discussion where Rich Strike basically attacked Greg Blasi's mount. Greg, the captain of the Outriders, and literally one of the most respected, if not the most respected, outrider in the country, and he got savaged as well as his pony by Rich Strike. But I saw a comment from somebody. I retweeted it, and I didn't write down who it was. I'll have to go find it. But he said, "I'm not a racing fan. I watch the Derby every year. Admittedly, I don't know what's going on, but the winner, starts biting people and horses immediately after. Now I'm a fan. That's the kind of chaos I can get behind."
Right.
I got a big kick out of that, and it got it's gotten a ton of likes and retweets and people, you know, capturing people's imagination. Andy Beyer, everybody. Andy, always a pleasure, and boy, it'd be nice to see you in the Pimlico press box again.
Probably won't happen this year, but you know, one of these days I will be back on the scene at Pimlico.
There you go. Andy, thanks so much.
Okay. Bye, Steve.
Andy Beyer, everybody. And that's been a pretty traditional conversation, actually, with Andy immediately first out of the box as we wrap up the start our Derby post script analysis. Eric Reed's going to join us at the top of the hour, so I'm certainly not going to not try to pigeonhole Brendan Walsh into a 5-minute window. So we'll get to Brendan afterward. Rich Migliori is running a quick errand to the feed store. So we'll talk to Mig later, all right? So we'll get toward the top of the hour here, and we'll come back with Eric Reed a couple of minutes. And in fact, I can might as well take the opportunity to glance at the rest of what we expect that Preakness field to turn into. And I mentioned, and Andy told you, the 92 on McPeak's creative minister. He was one of the impressive undercard and aftercard, afterstake performers. Strobe was outstanding as well. That universal good thing of Brad Cox's that we had talked about. And, you know, I'm not an all button. The all button doesn't, you know, it's not my approach, but I did single in that last pick four, pick five. I was singling Strobe, so I don't know. Maybe it would have been worthwhile to consider the 20, the all, for including Rich strike, because Candy Tycoon was good. Paid $14.60 and had a nice post-Derby hit. And when we talked to Brendan Santin, who is a horse, of course, that we had, when it comes to the Turf Classic, you know, this is a horse we talked about in New Orleans with the Muniz and also in the fairgrounds. And of course, he went favored in those two races. And now he shows up in the Turf Classic, and you got 7-1. That's one of the advantages of sticking with a horse. I can tell you, in fact, I should really reach out to him, but Magoey, we understand that Frank, he did hit the all button when it came to the Derby, and he had singled Strobe in the nightcap, and so he hit the pick five, the late pick five, which paid $110,000. So congratulations to Frank. The pick four paid $40,700. Strobe before or after Candy Tycoon, after the Derby, and Santin. And, of course, Jackie's Warrior was a single, for God's sake. You know, by all rights, it was not. This is one of the things, you know, you start to, you know, you get kind of punchy and, you know, there's so many tickets to construct and the portions of the weekend. And when you sit down again and look at it, I mean, most of the tickets had Jackie's Warrior singled on mine. And then I also had Aloha West and Prevalence basically as the C's. Reinvestment Risk actually ran very well. 9-2, came back nicely. He was chasing Jackie's Warrior home coming out of the Carter. So two back-to-back grade one placements for Reinvestment Risk. This was not easy to hit, but by any means. But I I guess the discussion, the all button discussion, needs to be revisited. It's just, to me, it's just not something I don't think I've ever, you know, on a bet like this, I've never done that. So maybe, I don't know, maybe it's worth, I mean, $110,000, it might be worth, you know, if you single Jackie's Warrior and you single Strobe, that leaves you, you know, with what, maybe four horses to consider in the Turf Classic? Santin, Adomo, Cheryl Spite, and of course Ivar ended up scratching, but yeah, those were the four that I had looked at. So, well, what could you reasonably do here? 3 by 4, 12 by 20, 120 for 50 cents. I don't know. Not my kind of bet, but I understand the approach, and certainly the reward was worth it. All right. With two choices, Kay. We could either take the break, or we could go for Eric. So, what do you think? You want to take the break? All right, let's do that. We'll come back and have our conversation with Eric Reed about winning a Derby. And I think the last time we talked to Eric, in reference to a, you know, one of his horses, it was probably Satan's Quick Chick. I still haven't gotten the answer how much Jerry Jamgochi and how much the Jammer, who's used Eric forever, how much the Jammer bet on Rich Strike. All right, hour two at the races. First of our many post-Derby Oaks weekend recaps. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo STEVE200. Visit NairaBets.com for details. Who you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with...
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day of the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series. Yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money.